Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. The U.S. National Security Strategy Paper puts Europe on edge. Europe's planned big loan to Ukraine is floundering, and fallout over the U.S. boat attacks intensifies. First, the U.S. National Security Strategy Paper puts Europe on edge. The Trump administration has issued a national security strategy document that fundamentally transforms U.S. relations with Europe. Traditional closeness is out. Open hostility to liberal governments and alignment with far-right parties are in. Europe, says the document, is facing the, quote, stark prospect of civilizational erasure because of immigration and climate change policies. The document pledges that the U.S. will support like-minded patriotic parties across the continent to prevent a future in which, quote, certain NATO members will become majority non-European. Without naming them directly, the document says the U.S. should be cultivating resistance across Europe by supporting political parties that fight against migration and promote nationalism. That describes several right-wing populist parties like Reform UK in Britain and the Alternative for Germany, known as AFD. We want Europe to remain European, says the document, to regain its civilizational self-confidence and to abandon its failed focus on regulatory sophistication. Another U.S. official went farther. The U.S. Deputy Secretary of State, Christopher Landau, said the, quote, unelected, undemocratic, and unrepresentative European Union was undermining U.S. security. And Tuesday, Trump amplified his criticisms, saying Europe is weak and decaying, and claiming it was destroying itself through immigration. European reaction has been swift and angry. The President of the European Council of National Leaders, Antonio Costa, said, quote, what we cannot accept is the threat to interfere in European politics. Allies do not threaten to interfere in the domestic political choices of their allies. The U.S. cannot replace Europe in what its vision is of free expression. Europe must be sovereign, unquote. Nikolai von Andarza, the head of European research at the German Institute for International and Security Affairs, said the U.S. strategy, quote, really represents a fundamental shift in transatlantic relations. It means open U.S. backing for regime change in Europe. Minna Alander of the Center for European Policy Analysis said the U.S. document was, quote, actually useful. It codifies in policy, in black and white, what has been evident all year long. Trump and his people are openly hostile to Europe. The incendiary language in the National Security Strategy paper isn't entirely new. Recall how Trump, at the United Nations in September, characterized Europe's push for regulating greenhouse gases, talking of it as being civilizational decline. The strategy paper also echoes Vice President Vance's speech in Munich in February, when he took European leaders to task for suppressing the far right. The rift with Europe is fodder for Moscow, whose widening sabotage campaign in Europe would now seem to have the U.S. on its side. Europe's planned big loan to Ukraine is floundering. For many months, the European Union had been seeking a way to release frozen Russian assets held mainly in Belgium as a major loan to Ukraine for post-war rebuilding. The original amount under consideration was around $240 billion. Now it seems the Europeans are going along with Trump, lowering the amount of the loan to $186 billion and even to $105 billion. The difference gives Trump incentives to offer Russia to promote investments, which would personally benefit Trump's billionaire cronies, though Belgium's concern about the legality of the loan and Hungary's opposition to it also complicate the loan idea. But mostly, the declining figure reflects the EU's weak position in the peace negotiations that the Witkoff-Kushner team are leading. As one writer puts it, quote, in short, European officials may end up offering Ukraine a financial band-aid when they had hoped for a financial bazooka. It is a make-or-break moment for Europe and for Europe's importance on the global stage. So said Daniel Hegedus, a regional director for the German Marshall Fund, an important think tank. The European Union will meet December 18 to make a final decision on the loan. Ukraine is faring better with military aid from Europe, Norway, Germany, and Poland have pledged $500 million in additional military aid as part of a NATO initiative, minus the United States. Fallout over the U.S. boat attacks intensifies. The patently illegal U.S. attacks on alleged drug boats in the Caribbean and Eastern Pacific have created a firestorm in Congress, with a number of Republicans joining Democrats in questioning, if not denouncing, the attacks. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's apparent order during the first such attack on September 2nd to kill everyone on board has led to demands for oral and video tapes of that order. Hegseth now claims he wasn't around for the order to kill two boat people who survived the initial attack, and that the order came amidst the fog of war. Well, there was no war and no fog, Mr. Hegseth. Trump at first said he saw no problem in releasing the tapes, then did his usual backtracking and said it was up to Hegseth to make that decision, and Hegseth isn't offering. The admiral who carried out Hegseth's order testified in closed session, after which Democratic Representative Jim Himes said the unretouched video of the September 2nd attack was, quote, one of the most troubling scenes he had seen in public service. The administration continues to insist Hegseth acted within his legal authority, defined by Trump as meaning defense of Americans from drug trafficking. So far, there have been 21 U.S. strikes that have killed 83 people. It is now firmly established that Admiral Alvin Halsey, the head of U.S. Southern Command who quit 2 years ahead of his planned departure, disagreed with the boat attacks and fumed regularly with Hegseth. The admiral is supposed to give public testimony soon. In other news, Trump is exasperated with Zelensky and his peace plan is sinking. The Witkoff-Kushner mission to Moscow has failed to convince Vladimir Putin that a ceasefire is better than more fighting. Putin firmly rejected the plan that Witkoff had concocted with Putin's advisor, Yuri Ushakov. Territory seems to be the crucial issue for Putin, as it always has been. It's either all of the Donbas region of eastern Ukraine or no deal, he said last week. Trump now says the talks with Russia are, quote, a mess, but that's not enough to put the U.S. on Ukraine's side. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky, with strong backing from the EU, has made clear that he cannot accept a plan that concedes Ukrainian territory to Russia. Trump insists Zelensky hasn't read the plan and, quote, has to start accepting things, since Russia, quote, has the upper hand. The other day, Trump went on one of his rants saying, quote, they, meaning the Ukrainians, are using war not to hold an election. I would think the Ukrainian people should have that choice. And maybe Zelensky would win, I don't know who would win, but they haven't had an election in a long time. You know, they talk about a democracy, but it gets to a point where it's not a democracy anymore, unquote. Zelensky rejected that argument, that he's clinging to power and avoiding an election, saying Trump was being, quote, completely unreasonable. This is a question for the people of Ukraine, not the people of other states, Zelensky said. I'll be honest, I'm ready for elections. He said he would ask Ukraine's legislature to change martial law to allow for elections. Expect a lot more pressure from Trump on Ukraine in the days ahead. And don't be surprised if he decides to walk away from Ukraine altogether. Next, that $20 billion bailout of Argentina has been pared back. A planned $20 billion bailout to Argentina from J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and Citigroup has been shelved as bankers pivot instead to a $5 billion short-term loan package to be used by Argentina to pay off its debt. The Trump administration had been seeking to bolster Argentine President Javier Milei's right-wing party when they announced a financial package that included a $20 billion currency swap with the U.S. Treasury Department and plans for a separate $20 billion bank-led debt facility. The Treasury Department is still providing funds to Argentina, but is withholding information on how the money is being spent. All Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent will say is that, quote, the Argentine economic bridge has now turned a profit for the American people. An Indian conglomerate will stop buying Russian oil, but India-Russia relations remain close. India's largest purchaser of Russian oil, Reliance Industries, announced that it would stop doing so December 1 in an apparent concession to Trump, who had tacked on a 25% tariff to the existing 25% tariff on imports from India to show his displeasure with those oil purchases. Trump has made ending India's oil dealings with Russia a condition for a U.S.-India trade deal. Nevertheless, India-Russia relations remain close. Vladimir Putin arrived December 4 for a two-day visit to India, the first since the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and was given a lavish reception by Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Modi said, quote, India-Russia friendship is a time-tested one that has greatly benefited our people. Ahead of the trip, officials worked to finalize a deal for India to pay about $2 billion to lease a nuclear-powered submarine from Russia. Russia-India trade has been climbing over the last 3 years, now approaching about $150 billion a year. China's trade surplus sets another record. Last year, China's international trade set a record with a surplus of exports over imports valued at $1 trillion. This year is even better. The surplus was $1 trillion in the first 11 months. The political significance of this development is noteworthy. First, the surplus shows that the high U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods have not slowed China's export steamroller. Second, the surplus indicates ongoing problems for China in relations with its European and other markets, where cheaper Chinese goods are overwhelming locally produced goods and making it difficult for many manufacturing plants to stay competitive. China's economic planners will again face accusations that their country is exporting overcapacity. And third, the export boom reflects a weak Chinese currency, the renminbi, raising the question whether the RMB is undervalued. A stronger RMB, some Chinese economists argue, would make imports cheaper and strengthen consumer demand, which has been a major domestic problem for China's leaders. Next, China-U.S. research collaboration has fallen sharply. An Australian think tank that tracks global research collaboration reports that U.S.-China research collaboration has fallen back to 2005 levels, a decline that began with the infamous China Initiative in the U.S. Justice Department to investigate ethnic Chinese researchers in the U.S. Only a quarter of the collaborations are with U.S. researchers now. Chinese are increasingly working with researchers in Pakistan, Belarus, and Saudi Arabia. The Australian report says, quote, the retreat comes at a time when China now generates almost 40% of global research output and dominates most critical technologies. Past collaborations between the world's two largest economies have produced advances ranging from genomics and earthquake monitoring to energy efficiency and agricultural productivity. Those days are now nearly gone. News from Israel and Gaza. Netanyahu on trial and Hamas on disarming. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been on trial for corruption since 2020 on charges that basically involve favors for business people in exchange for gifts. The war with Hamas had given him a reprieve of sorts, but now he's back in the trenches. Mimicking Trump, he has denied all charges and pressed Israel's president, Isaac Herzog, for a pardon. As the New York Times reports, quote, Mr. Netanyahu's petition to Herzog admitted nothing and expressed no contrition. In a one-page letter that he himself signed, he did not use the word pardon, instead stiffly requesting an end of the trial. It came a little more than 2 weeks after President Trump sent a letter to Mr. Herzog urging him to pardon Mr. Netanyahu. It's a witch hunt, said Trump. Like Trump, Netanyahu has assailed judges and denied all accountability. He has also made the pardon the top public issue, displacing his responsibility for Israel's lack of preparedness when Hamas struck and his attempts at changes in the judicial system. Netanyahu's political opponents say they would favor a pardon if Netanyahu would finally retire from politics. Fat chance. In Gaza, a senior member of Hamas's leadership says the group is ready to discuss, quote, freezing or storing its weapons. We are open to have a comprehensive approach in order to avoid further escalations or in order to avoid any further clashes or explosions, said the spokesman. The Prime Minister of Qatar, meanwhile, denies that his country has funded Hamas. Qatar, he said, quote, financially supported the people of Gaza, not Hamas. But he also said Qatar, quote, would not finance the reconstruction of what others have destroyed in Gaza. And once again, Prime Minister Netanyahu has rejected calls for Palestinian statehood, saying during a visit by Germany's chancellor, quote, the purpose of a Palestinian state is to destroy the Jewish state. And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.